Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Podfather. Today, as always, I'm joined by Jordan, but we also have a special guest, Jordan's brother, Liam. Welcome, Liam.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You would know Liam, listeners, from our birthday episode last year when we watched, what did we watch?
Gangs of New York.
And Liam had a lot of very clever insights about where the word copper came from.
That's right. He did his research. Why is Liam here today, though?
Why am I here today?
Because you begged to be.
I did. Because Star Wars is something that's been very dear to my heart. Same with the people on the Podfather. So talking Star Wars on here is something I've always wanted to do. And Solo seemed like the perfect opportunity to do that.
We are talking about Solo, a Star Wars story. Today, on today's episode, we're doing a new movie. For the first time, we're doing a blockbuster new release movie. We're being current.
Yes, and to be fair, we're not doing what you would think of when you think of gangster movies, but we're doing what was marketed as a gangster movie, Star Wars movie. So we've found a loophole. Deal with it. We're going to do it. But first, there's some follow-up. Alex?
We had a string of tweets from a long-time listener, two-time guest now, Mari Law, after she was on a couple of episodes ago about going in style. She wanted to let us know, after we spoke about the Avengers, that she actually saw the Avengers, and she didn't like it. She doesn't understand why it's so popular, and she said that the hype is dumb, basically. So a bit of follow-up from our guest, Mari Law.
Well, to be fair, you clarified and she saw it in Spanish. And I think, Mari Law, I think her enjoyment of the movie would be altered by watching a movie in one's non-first language. Of course, her Spanish is very good, but I think that would make the jokes not land quite as well. Particularly, it's a dub, so I don't know. Lips are moving at different speeds. I don't know. That would take me out of the movie, certainly. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that I trust her judgment. I saw it for the fourth time last night.
Fourth time?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it so much.
Well, now that she knows you don't trust her judgment, hopefully we can have a few more arguments between you guys. Next piece of follow-up I have is that I was looking at our Twitter the other day, or actually a couple of weeks ago, and I found a lot of tweets from a new fan. His name is Mr. Movie Fan.
Oh.
And he says he recently found our podcast. The only reason why he set up Twitter was to tweet at us.
Are you serious? How did I miss this?
I don't know how you missed this, but I found it all. So he says, you guys do a good job. My only issue so far is that the Usual Suspects episode, I don't think you gave Chaz Palminteri enough credit. He's amazing. So this guy's giving us some good little suggestions and tips. So shout out to Mr. Movie Fan. He's sent us some movies to watch as well. Wise Girls, Miller's Crossing, Hoodlum, Little Caesar. He's given us all these little movies to watch.
Miller's Crossing, we talked about a little while ago because that's the Coen brothers. And we did want to do that. I guess we just forgot about it. But that's in the book, Miller's Crossing. Thank you very much. It's nice to have a new fan. Of course, we've got our old favorites, Whoppo and Wade is Whoppo, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Marky Mark and Whoppo Wade. Yeah. But we haven't heard from them lately.
No, so get in touch, guys. We're forgetting your names. You haven't been in touch for that long.
Before we talk about something that we'll both have an opinion on, I wanted to just tell you about something that I found that I think relates to the podcast pretty directly. I was posting the Bloody Mama episode on Facebook, and you know how I always put like a little picture from the movie on the Facebook post. I was trying to find a good picture from Bloody Mama, which was kind of difficult on Google Images because obviously it's, you know, not a hugely well-known popular movie, so there's not that much out there. But I did find a picture, and when I followed on to where that picture was from, it took me to this website that I was pretty astonished that it exists, but I'm very happy that it exists. It's called the IMFDB, the Internet Movie Firearms Database.
Oh, that's cool.
So what this is, it's actually an amazing website. It's like a wiki. It's set up like a wiki, and it basically, for probably any movie ever, really specifically details the guns used in the movie. So you can type in The Godfather, you can type in Full Metal Jacket, you can type in Bloody Mama, you can type in anything. And it gives you the picture of the gun, and then it has screenshots from the movie of them using the guns, and it talks. It's just total gun nut crazy stuff. So check that out, guys, if you're interested. I'm going to start looking at it maybe for each movie that we do because it's got some interesting stuff. I'm kind of into guns, though I don't think anyone should own them. So you can find out some interesting stuff. It's a very interesting website.
Well, when we get around to robbing that armor guard truck, we'll find out which guns are the best to use.
Exactly. No, seriously. We can base it off our gangster movie heroes.
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say. But we did also want to have a quick chat. We got so much to talk about today, by the way. So sorry, everyone who's listening and being bored. We wanted to talk about the Bohemian Rhapsody trailer because that came out like a week or so ago. What did you think of it?
Did you see this too, Liam?
Me and my mates loved it. We're very keen to see it. I think it's going to be interesting to see. I kind of like the medley of music that they used in the trailer, like the medley of Queen songs. That really caught me.
To be honest, everything about the production of this movie has me kind of very wary about it because they were going to do it with Sacha Baron Cohen, but then he dropped out because the rest of the Queen members didn't want to talk about like the reality of the situation, you know, that Mercury had HIV and AIDS, and they just sort of wanted to paint a happy little picture. And so Sacha Baron Cohen left, and then obviously Rami Malek is in it now, and he looks like he's going to be great, for the record. But the whole thing gives me like a Tally movie Channel 7 special vibe, like, hey, look how great Queen are. And of course they were, but this guy, Freddie Mercury, was like, his life ended in a tragedy that he was very open about. He was openly bisexual, and you know, the AIDS epidemic at the time was so huge and affected his life, and evidently the movie isn't really going to touch on that, and I think that's a lie. I think that's bullshit.
Yeah, that is.
I think that's true. That's a missed opportunity because that is, I guess, a defining part of his life in the end, obviously. I think the movie actually looks really, really good. I think it looks better than a Channel 7 biodrama, though I know what you mean by that.
Like it looked like the NXS one, but that was good. I enjoyed that.
My problem with it is that I kind of think, I feel a bit, like, I really, really love Queen and I actually don't know that much Queen music, but I really, really love Freddie Mercury, and I've watched plenty of concert DVDs and stuff. Like, my dad used to show me stuff when I was growing up, and I think it's going to be a little bit perverse to watch it because I almost kind of feel like I know a lot about his life, and I've seen a lot of the performances, and I kind of get it, and I'm worried that like I do kind of want to see it, but I'm also worried that it's just going to kind of make me feel a bit weird, if that makes sense. Like maybe it's someone who doesn't need to be played by someone else because I feel like he's already such an enigma, and all you need to do is just go on YouTube and watch some of his concerts, and that's kind of all you need to know about it, if that makes sense. But I do think it looks good, so I'm a little bit torn about it.
And I'd say from like a filmmaking perspective, excluding that really rich narrative of all the conflicts he had, like personally, would make it a much better movie if they included that. So I'm not really sure, like writing wise, why they haven't.
Well, you know, he's sort of been, his narrative has been, for want of a better term, like straight washed. Or the complete opposite. And the sort of subtleties and intricacies of his personal life. Obviously, he was a celebrity. Who cares about his personal life? But if you're going to make a movie about him, well, then you have to deal with that stuff. Like, because he was very open about it. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. It might be a great film with a good narrative arc, or it could be a classic biopic. Listen to the fun songs and, you know, not much depth to it. But we'll see.
Yeah.
When does it come out?
I'm not sure, to be honest. But also, Bryan Singer was directing it, and he left because of his sexual assault allegations and stuff as well. And the guy that is finishing it for like post-production is he directed Eddie the Eagle with Hugh Jackman and Taron Egerton. So this is another case, and we're going to talk about this with Solo. This is another case of a director, the movie changing directors halfway through. So that will also make it for an interesting viewing experience too.
That always annoys me when that happens. So like it always instantly makes me think that the movie's not that the movie's going to be bad, but like it just kind of puts a sour taste in your mouth about a movie if they like change directors or do change actors. Like I don't know why it really annoys me that happens. I understand that it has to happen sometimes, but I don't know, it kind of just spoils it a little bit.
I think knowing too much about behind the scenes of movies is going to spoil it anyway, to be honest, but I still do it.
For me, sometimes it enriches the experience if you know about the behind the scenes.
Well, that's true too. Well, speaking of which, Liam watched Apocalypse Now for the first time.
Oh, yeah. We have to talk about that.
He turned it off.
Tell me what you thought. No, did you?
Oh, that's not fair. I had somewhere to go, so I wasn't going to watch the whole thing.
No, it's because you were falling asleep, Liam.
I was, yeah. Because we were reading Heart of Darkness by Conrad.
Ooh, cool.
In literature. Yeah. And obviously, that's what the movie's based off loosely, but set in Vietnam. And I was watching it. And, like, as a movie, it's pretty breathtaking, but it kind of acted as a lullaby. Like, I was already really tired. I'd spent the whole day studying. And, like, the poetic narration and the atmospheric soundtrack and the visuals, it kind of, and the slow pacing, I did just fall asleep. But I'm sure in, like, a cinema setting, it would have been different.
No, it's not.
And I will definitely endeavor to watch it all the way through in one sitting, because I think knowing that I wasn't going to watch it all the way through made me fall asleep. But yeah,
did you watch the Redux or the theatrical cut?
The Redux.
I think I'm going to start telling people to not watch the Redux. I've never actually seen the original version, but I think because obviously the Redux is longer, and I want people to enjoy this movie, I'm going to start telling people to just watch the original cut and not like deal with the extra, because it's probably not necessary. If you like it, then watch the Redux. But I think there's a little bit of a sometimes, I mean, I always do this with movies. Like I always want to watch the longest possible cut. But that's not always actually the best thing to do. Especially if you haven't seen it before. But I have faith in you, Liam. I think one day you'll watch it and you'll understand it and you'll talk to me and you'll say, this movie is the best movie ever. I totally understand it now. Jordan's wrong. I could never fall asleep watching this movie.
I think it's a good movie. I just think it puts you to sleep.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely see both sides. I can see how, like, filmmaking-wise, it looks spectacular. And, like, the narrative elements, like, I've just spent months studying them in literature, so I'm kind of over them. But they, I obviously haven't seen the full movie yet, but I'm sure they're there. But yeah, it does just act as a lullaby.
Fair enough. I can't argue with that.
The other thing we need to do very briefly for a long-time listener, two-time guest, Mari Law, is she wanted to hear our thoughts on Deadpool 2. Obviously, we have to do it spoiler-free. Liam hasn't seen it either. Did you like it, Alex?
I fucking loved it. Funnily enough, I actually, and we'll talk about this later, but I saw it before I saw Solo, even though they were both already released. So that says a lot about how excited I was for Solo. I actually saw a non-Star Wars movie before a Star Wars movie. I loved Deadpool 2. I was worried about Deadpool 2 because the first one was so good, but it's got a pretty clear gimmick that I didn't know if that would transcend to a second movie, but I think it totally does. It's got so many good jokes, so many jokes that I didn't understand. I only got like two of the Avengers jokes, but there's more. There's parts that I want to talk about off air because it was like so clever and so funny, but I think it holds up. I think it's good. And it's no secret that they're kind of gearing up to do X-Force stuff. And I think that this is a good launching pad for that. And as long as Deadpool doesn't remain the main focus of every movie, I think he'll be a really great character going ahead.
That's a good little review.
Thank you.
I thought it was like a laugh a minute movie, which would be a compliment, but I think there was a joke every 30 seconds. So if for every time I laughed, there was another joke that kind of was like, eh. I didn't think the writing was as strong. But having said that, I really enjoyed it. I don't think it was as good as the first one, but it's still really worth seeing if you enjoyed the first one. If you didn't like the first one, you're not going to like this one.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
And it has kind of got me excited about X-Men again, and now I can't be fucked with the Avengers again. So I keep going back and forth between if I'm going to bother watching the Avengers movies. But after seeing Deadpool, I was like, nah, fuck the Avengers. I like X-Men.
Well, watching Deadpool, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Deadpool and Logan are the only good parts of the X-Men franchise currently.
That's not true.
Currently. Like, you can't tell me Apocalypse was a good movie.
Apocalypse wasn't necessarily a good movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, they'll do some good movies. I think the Dark Phoenix stuff will be good. I think Dark Phoenix is a good character. And, you know, I think they'll flip it on its head.
Well, I hope so, because I do quite like the X-Men movies. Up until Apocalypse, then I was like, oh, okay. Nah, sorry. Sorry, X-Men. But I had some other stuff I wanted to talk about, but I can talk about it the next time. Although I do really want to hear, Alex, about the donkey kick to the balls.
In Santorini, they have this really kind of steep walking path that kind of zigzags up the hill because the all the buildings and houses and hotels and restaurants are like on the hill, and then it goes down into the water. So it's like, and the port's down there on the other side of the island as well. So it's really, really steep. So if you want to go down to the old port and go to the water on that side of the island, you can either walk down and walk back up, which is like takes ages and it's really steep, or you can get a donkey ride. So I was just walking down just to have a bit of a look at the view and then maybe walk back up, and the donkeys were all coming past. And the old Greek guy who was leading the donkeys starts asking me to help him, like, grab one of the donkeys. And, of course, I don't really know what he's saying, but I kind of, you know, did that thing where you converse with someone who doesn't speak your language, and I was like, okay, you want me to grab the donkey? So I grabbed this donkey, and then as soon as I grabbed the donkey, I realized I shouldn't be fucking grabbing a random donkey. I don't know how to handle donkeys. And then the donkey stopped, and I thought it was all good. But then he kept going, and I tried to stop him again, and he kicked me.
In the balls.
Luckily, it hit my thigh first, and the ricochet was my balls, so it wasn't quite as bad as it could have been.
Goodness.
But I was pretty angry after that, and I was like, I'm not helping you anymore, old man. I'm going to just stand here for a second and recover.
Well, I'm glad that you're okay now. Well, speaking of donkey kicks to the balls, should we talk about Solo? Let me tell you a little tidbit that I learned because Kelsey Grammer was on Conan, I believe, last week.
Oh, yeah, I did. I saw this, but I didn't watch it. I saw the video, though.
Yeah, so he auditioned for George Lucas when he was young for the role of Han Solo. He didn't know that that's what he was doing at the time. His agent was like, oh, go down the street. Some guy named Lucas is doing a space movie. And so he went down and he read for it, and he was like, oh, I think you're too old for the young guy and a bit too young for the old guy, but just read anyway. And then, you know, sure enough, Star Wars came out, and Kelsey was like, oh, shame I didn't get this. Cheers, Lucas. Yeah, I thought that was a fun little – Imagine the world had Kelsey Grammer got that role.
Wow.
I can't even imagine, like, how he would have looked as such a young man, because that would have been pre-Cheers and everything.
He would have looked like David Hyde Pierce. Can you imagine Han as Kelsey Grammer, though? It'd be like, oh, dear God, Luke.
I mean, look, as much as I love Kelsey Grammer, I really don't think that Star Wars would have been as successful if he was Han Solo. I think the only Han Solo is Harrison Ford.
They would have been drinking blue sherry instead of blue milk. We're going to do a non-spoiler talking about Solo first, just initially, so that you listeners that have come to tune in but don't want the spoils can hear it first, and then we'll go into a bit more spoilers. What did you think, Alex?
I think this is the best Star Wars movie that Walt Disney's ever made.
Wow.
Wow.
What did you think, Liam? We saw it together. I know what you thought. What did you think?
I think it sort of represents what Star Wars has kind of become, which is a bit of a joke.
Yes, go in, Liam.
Yeah, I think they're trying to make a Star Wars movie not a good movie, if you get what I'm saying. Like, they're trying to incorporate all these different elements and trying to have this balancing act, which is important because you have all of these fans to appeal to, but they're losing this sense of, well, okay, how are we actually going to make this a good movie? And there are so many points you see that where they just purposely do stuff to entice fans or pay homage to the originals, but they're just lacking that good storytelling.
Well, I agree with you, Liam. We both just had our face in our hands for a lot of it and laughed out loud at a lot of the dialogue. I just think it was a poorly handled movie. But having said that, I think it's a fine kids movie, which I guess is what Star Wars is, right? They're kids movies. And I think this one might be the most kid-friendly of all of them, but I don't think it was a good movie.
I think that there's and I've, especially after seeing this movie, I've really changed my, well, I haven't changed my opinions, but I've kind of compromised or just kind of accepted a lot of stuff. And I do want to say that I strongly, even though I like this movie, I really, really strongly disagree with the story they told, the way they did it. Like, I disagree with the whole movie, as I don't think this is what they should be doing. So I do want to make that very clear. I don't think this is what they should be doing as a Star Wars movie. I can tell you what I think they should be doing later. But accepting that it is a different world now and they are clearly trying to just do, you know, a movie every year, basically the whole, like we say, Marvel model of making movies, accepting all of that, I liked it. And I'm sort of at the point now where, like, I can't just keep being upset and angry about what I think they should be doing, which would be better movies, and kind of just see if I can enjoy what they do make. And I actually wanted to ask you guys, I'm not sure if I liked this movie, maybe because I actually kind of had low expectations to begin with. Do you think that has affected your opinion of it?
Definitely. Like, with all the other Star Wars movies, I've seen them opening day, opening weekend. This is the first Star Wars movie I waited like a week to see, had like forgot about in my mind until it was the day of seeing it, and really had low expectations. And wasn't talking about it beforehand. But yeah, I think going into that, I had pretty low expectations. And I think it met those pretty low expectations. And like George said, we just came out of it laughing. Like, it was just a big joke. We're like, oh, this is what Star Wars has become. And we were, and like, it was an enjoyable movie. And I think you're right with that kids' appeal. And like, it was fun. It was fun. But it was just funny. It was like they were just making a joke out of all of these, you know, these Star Wars innuendos and characters and everything.
Yeah, I think, like, because I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, particularly compared to the two of you. I really quite enjoy them, but I never delved very far into extended universe stuff. And I loved The Force Awakens. I have to say that's my favorite Star Wars movie because I like the characters in it and I like the story that they're telling. However, this movie, like you said, Liam, it's trying to do like be Star Wars-y, and I'm not upset that it's trying to do that. I'm not like, oh, it's ruined Star Wars, because I kind of don't care too much. I just wanted to go and see
Star Wars is already ruined.
I just wanted to go and see a good movie, and I don't think I did. I reckon let's get into spoilers now. So if you haven't seen it, don't. No, do if you want. But if you haven't seen it, we're going to start being spoilery.
I mentioned that I disagree with how they did it, and I think that, you know, now that we're talking about spoilers, the main problem that I have, and I think this is, like you're saying, Star Wars is a bit of a joke now, is everything, and this kind of applies to Rogue One as well. The story of Rogue One is based on something that was mentioned in A New Hope. The story of Solo is based on things that were mentioned in the original trilogy, and they don't really add much on that, and I think that's a problem. And I think the fact that they included everything that we already knew about Han Solo in the one movie is also a problem. And I'm annoyed that there's this idea that the backstory of the character has to include Chewie, it has to include Lando, it has to include the Millennium Falcon, and it has to include the Kessel Run. Like, it's all in the same movie. I don't like that. I think that's dumb. I don't think that really does anything good for the character. I think it's all kind of fan service-y. So I agree with all of that.
Yeah.
But I'm really surprised at how they pulled that all off as a whole. And I actually really found it fun and enjoyable.
Well, I'm going to read to you from the New York Times review, because they talk about that on those things in this review. So, where did Han Solo get his last name? How did he and Chewbacca meet? What was the winning hand in the game of Sabacc that gave him possession of the Millennium Falcon? How exactly did he make the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs? Solo, a Star Wars story, answers all of these questions and more. This isn't a bad thing, but it makes this episode, directed by Ron Howard from a screenplay by Jonathan Kasdan and Lawrence Kasdan, a curiously low-stakes blockbuster. In effect, a filmed Wikipedia page. And I think that's the best way to describe it. Low-stakes blockbuster, and it's a filmed Wikipedia page. I could have read all of these facts.
Yeah, that's a good, Wikipedia point. Page.
Yeah, well, exactly right. Do you know what I mean? I think it was ticking all the boxes so much that it forgot to tick the stakes box.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there is, I suppose, the only storyline that kind of isn't something that we already knew about is the whole Kira storyline. And I kind of do like how that ended, actually.
And the gangster storyline was one that we hadn't seen in this effect. We've got Jabba, but in terms of those characters, the Paul Bettany character and stuff, they were new, but they had to fit around the old stuff.
And actually, you know, to keep praising the movie, that was what I liked about the movie the best, was that finally, for the first time ever, even though this movie was so much samey Star Wars-y stuff that we already knew about or you know, that we already have seen before, for the first time ever, I felt like I was actually getting a movie that had something different with Crimson Dawn and kind of the places we went to and the things that they did. You know, it wasn't Jedi, Sith, Empire, Rebellion. It was actually kind of a separate thing, something that you do see in some of the video games and other media that I think that's what they should be making these movies about. These auxiliary movies shouldn't focus on the Rebellion or the Empire or the Jedi or the Sith. They should focus on these other little things that they can, you know, kind of make up whatever the fuck they want within the universe, you know?
Mm.
So I like that part of it.
Yeah.
Liam, you really liked the scene where he was in the trenches.
Yeah, I did like that scene because it did remind me of that whole, like, Old Republic video games and Battlefront video games where, you know, you get a bit more insight into the whole universe of Star Wars, which isn't explained in the episodes. Where,
yeah,
you know, the Empire is conquering, like, thousands of planets and, like, you get into the mechanics of all these missions that they go on to take control, which you play in video games and you read in comics and you've seen, like, you know, some Clone Wars movies and those animated series. But I don't think it's ever really explored because you're right, they do just center around the main Skywalker family line and Sith Jedi family. So I did like that aspect to it. It did really remind me of the Clone Wars series in the whole, like, with the Clone Wars series, they could really make up whatever they wanted, any storylines or anything. And the type of writing in this and the storylines that they made up really reminded me of some episodes, in that series.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about how the gangster elements, because it was kind of marketed as a gangster film / heist movie. And in fact, the blue opening crawl replacement had the words Mean Streets in it. It had the word gangsters in it. So it kind of set up that, it was a street level Star Wars movie in a way. Like, it's not about the big good versus evil. It's about a bit of the lower good versus evil stuff that was happening. However, and I really quite liked a bit of it. Like, Paul Bettany's character was a bit eh, but he was okay. And the bigger implications that that had was okay. I think the movie failed in terms of being a heist movie or a gangster movie. I'm not talking about as a Star Wars movie now. I'm talking about just in terms of fulfilling those other tropes. I think where it failed was it had the heist being for the gangsters, and like they were stealing for the gangsters. They weren't stealing from the gangsters. So whereas something like our favorite movie, The Sting, where they're trying to hoodwink someone that we don't like, for a lot of it they're working with these shady people, but the shady people were posed as villains, not like The Godfather or something where we're on their side, so it doesn't matter that they're shady. They were the antagonists of the piece, and yet this heist was done for them, and I think that's kind of where it fell apart in that sort of narrative, that part of the narrative. Would you agree with that?
Why does that make it fall apart? Like, that mean, well, you mean it's less interesting?
Less stakes and less interesting. Yeah, I just thought I didn't care about the heist at all. That whole bit with the mine, I really didn't care that why they were there. To me, that just felt like a reason for them to do the Kessel Run, and had no narrative stakes as far as I was concerned, because you knew that they were going to do it because they had to do the Kessel Run.
Well, you know, they didn't have to fucking put the Kessel Run in this movie, I'll tell you that much. That's the one thing they shouldn't have put in this movie.
I agree.
No, I kind of disagree with you, because I think that, like, you know, everyone, like, Han is a smuggler, and I think that, you know, I actually kind of hope there's a sequel to this movie, and we'll talk more about that later too. But I think that, you know, being a smuggler in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago obviously is different to, you know, being a gangster in the streets of New York. But that is kind of his life. And he's always kind of, I guess, adjacent to the gangster groups because he's doing work for them in a lot of his life and missions and situations. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it's not a gangster movie, but is it kind of a heisty caper movie? I think a little bit it is, because, you know, there is a big train scene where they have to steal the thing, and then they go, you know, there is a plan involved and a bit of a mission and time sensitive stuff. So I think it kind of works as a heisty type movie.
Yeah, I think partly it does. And you're right, in terms of Han's character as we know it from the previous movies, of course he works for anyone who's going to pay him, but the character that they set up in this movie, I mean, you could see glimpses of Han certainly, but it didn't feel like there were any stakes for him doing that thing for Dryden Vos at all, like, because they'd kind of escaped. They could have just gone anywhere. They got light speed. You know what I mean? Why did they, once they left him, why did they do the heist at all?
Yeah, I think they should have explored the whole, like, the Gangs of the Galaxy kind of idea, where there's, like, you know, all these different gangs who control different parts of the galaxy, because that's within Star Wars canon, and you see that through, you know, the Jabba the Hutt plot line in the original trilogy, and you kind of see it through here, through like the opposition gang, well, not really, well, group of the pirates who come in. I mean, I think if you like pulled that storyline into the movie a bit more and had that a bit more of a stakes for Han,
a more rival gang.
Yeah, like maybe he like double crosses or something like that, where there's a bit more stakes and a bit more conflict, and it's not just Han like against Paul Bettany's character, or you know, trying to relieve himself from his own situations, where there's a bit more of a conflict between like you know, an antagonist and a protagonist. And I do think that it was a missed opportunity having, you know, really exploring that whole gangster element of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, they kind of just dipped their toe in a little.
And I think that, you know, like you said, you know, as part of it was just in service to do the Kessel Run or to meet Lando or to do this or to do that. And, you know, what I really would have wanted this movie to do, but, you know, this isn't what the bloody masses want or what Walt Disney wants. But what I would have wanted them to do is to just kind of have a much more stripped back, simpler movie. You know, it doesn't really need a love interest. I don't see Han as having love interests in his life until Leia, to be honest. Although there is an argument to be made that maybe, you know, he needed to have his heart broken as a young man to be the guy that he was later. But anyway, you know, don't have all of that. Don't have Lando. Don't have the Kessel Run. Maybe just have it be him with some gangster groups, you know, a really kind of basic story. And then if you do a sequel, maybe then he meets Lando. And you know, you can introduce those things later. But like we're saying, because they put it all into the one movie, the real story of Han actually is or should be wasn't able to be explored.
Well, now we know how he got his name, though, so that's pretty cool.
That was actually kind of clever, because I think you were expecting him to be the one that says Solo, but they just kind of give it to him. So I thought that was done kind of okay. You asked about the new characters. I think the new characters were pretty good, actually. Woody Harrelson was, I think, great. And quite fun, and a good kind of, I guess, mentor in a funny way for Han, because he's like this seasoned smuggler. I don't think that his gang was necessary, or like his wife, you know, I mean, she, like, that kind of didn't seem to really add much to the story, because she dies and then he kind of just gets over it, and there's nothing really to do with that in the end. And I thought that old Emilia Clarke actually was really good, and I was most worried about her. I think she starts off more interesting on the Carillion, the first planet, and then when you meet her again later in the movie, she kind of feels a bit more like Daenerys, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I don't think she's a very good actor. I like her, and I really like her as Daenerys, but I'm not convinced she's a good actor, and I didn't like her in this. I thought she felt like she had no presence.
I also don't think the writing for her was very good as well.
No.
Like her dialogue scenes between her and Han, and her own like personal growth throughout the film wasn't really explored, or like, and there was no real shock when like she, you know, it turns out she was like double crossing, and it was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, there was no real like emotional weight to her actions.
Yeah, for me, it was everyone's telling you, oh, she's messed up.
Yeah.
But, and then when it turned out that she, you know, actually really was a darker character, I just didn't buy it, because the only reason why I was supposed to buy it was because people had been telling me, oh, no, she's done things. Like, no, I need to see it in her eyes. Okay, big question then. What did you think of Alden Ehrenreich?
The big question.
Because it was 2 years ago that we talked about the casting of this.
I think that, I mean, it's tough. It's tough because, like, at the end of the day, no one, I don't think that it is possible for someone to actually perform a young Harrison Ford Han Solo. So I appreciate that he kind of didn't really do that. I think that he took from the character enough little bits, and the writing was pretty good for him. I think it was pretty in tune with the character, but it was like a new take on it. And I think that's the best that they could have done, because if they had have tried to make him too much like Harrison Ford, it's just never going to happen, because Harrison Ford's like, he has this one of those guys that just has a charisma, and like, you can't even try to touch it. It's just him. So I think they kind of mixed it up and made a new sort of character, which I think was fine. I liked it.
Okay. Yeah, I thought he did a fine job too. Not great, not terrible, just fine.
Yeah, I think like for what was written for him, I think he did a pretty good job. And like, you're right, Alex, you do see a few like slight mannerisms, and like some of the writing as well. You know, you can be like, okay, that's Han. but it wasn't too, it wasn't him like trying too much to be like Harrison Ford and it failing completely.
I think this is another good comparison with the Marvel movies and the way that Star Wars is going, which is that, you know, as Star Wars fans, and this is what I'm starting to do, we need to be less precious about it. Because when you look at Marvel movies or comic book movies in general, you know, there are so many iterations of the superheroes in the comic book world, in the movie world, in the TV world, that, you know, people know what each superhero is kind of like, but there's different people playing them all the time. And if Star Wars is going to be making movies every year, I think we're going to have to get used to different iterations of the same characters. Which, like I said, I don't agree that that's a good way to go. They should probably just leave those characters in the past and make new characters. But there's going to be Han Solo, there's going to be Boba Fett, there might be, you know, another Obi-Wan movie, which obviously we know that character already. Ewan McGregor has played it. But, you know, I think we're going to have to get used to the idea that we will see the same characters portrayed by different people in different ways. And that's kind of okay if that's what Star Wars is going to be for the next 1,000 years.
And it does look like it's going that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's two separate new trilogies already announced. The ones from the Game of Thrones guys and then the new Rian Johnson one. Obviously, Fett has just been announced. You've got episode 9 coming out. I mean, it's going to be a lot. But I think it's one of those things you can sort of pick and choose. Maybe you don't like this franchise, this trilogy, but you might like the next one, or you don't like the anthology movies. Well, that's okay because they're different every time, or, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm interested to see what you guys think, because obviously you're critically panning this movie. But if you take – if you kind of – what I liked about this movie was that if you actually took out if you had never seen a Star Wars movie before in your life and you didn't get all the jokes and all the Star Wars-y fan service-y references, I think this actually plays as a good Star Wars story, which is what they promoted as, a Star Wars story. And I think this is the first time, like I said, it felt like some of the video games, like this is actually the first time since Disney has had Star Wars that I've actually felt like this is Star Wars in a funny way. So I think they kind of pulled that off. And my point is that, you know, I think after we finish this new trilogy and then after we do, I don't know, Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, like what I actually am looking forward to is those new trilogies that maybe will have new characters, new settings. Like, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do when they stop regurgitating and stop throwing back to the original stuff. And I think this movie was a good stepping stone into what will be hopefully good, fresh, new Star Wars movies. And if they make a sequel that features Han Solo, Crimson Dawn, Kira, maybe Jabba the Hutt, like that might be interesting. Now that they've gotten rid of all of his backstory and they can maybe just tell a Han Solo story that we don't know, that could be a really good movie.
That's true. That's true. Cramming everything into one movie, they've left the pathway open for the unknown. And, you know, they've actually created a character in Kira who we don't know a lot about. But what we do know is that she's connected to a character that we know.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that no one who hasn't seen it is still listening. But that reveal with Maul, that was one of the best parts of the movie, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Liam and I were like, oh, as opposed to, oh, for like the first time in the whole movie.
And it really caught me by surprise. And it did get me excited for there to be more of that told, because like, fuck it, why not? You know, that'd be fun.
However, I think the way they did it was a bit, I was saying this to Liam, I think it would have been better if Kira just flew away at the end there. She didn't talk to Maul then. She just flew away. And then Han was like, oh, she's coming to get me. Nah, sorry. And then everyone's like, oh, what? Then do the Han shot first thing or whatever. Then follow Kira to where Darth Maul is and see him in person. I think that would have been much more impressive than just a hologram. And then cut back to the Lando Han jungle deal. And then it's still a bit of a flimsy ending. But I think showing Maul would have gotten fans excited for the future again.
Yeah. The whole hologram thing was like a completely blue hologram, and then they had just a red lightsaber just for the sake of it being red. Even when you couldn't see his red and black face. And like, I think in real life, reveal of him would have been so much better. And even if you had like an opening shot of him with his claw, like robotic feet, I think they could have done that heaps better than it just of being a hologram. And I think they could have set up Kira's character going to the future a lot better rather than her just, you know, having the key and obviously being able to operate the ship now, and like being the next in charge, but her kind of owning that role and like being really satisfied with what she's done. And then, you know, maybe you could see her like walk down the ship and like see everything as her own now and her own that Crimson Diamond company or gang. And when she comes out to Maul, like it's really set her up as the next threat or antagonist or as a bigger character for the future.
I would have liked that.
Yeah, it kind of, because there isn't actually a sequel plan for this, right? I know there's rumors of a Lando movie, but because they kind of leave it on a bit of a, like, we could do a sequel if we want, but we maybe won't. I wish they had committed to just like, yeah, let's just do a sequel, you know, because I think they should. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
But I'm worried now that it hasn't done so well that maybe they won't do a sequel. Maybe they'll be like, oh, no.
Yeah, I honestly don't think there will be a sequel soon because I have, you know, the Fett planned. They'll have Obi-Wan planned. This hasn't done terribly well compared to other Star Wars films. And I think, you know, leaving it 4 or 5 years afterwards is gonna you know, land pretty flat if they release announce a single sequel.
Every subsequent movie since they've started releasing them has made less and less money on like opening weekends. So it's going to be interesting to see how episode 9 does with JJ back. A lot of the fans didn't like The Last Jedi. I didn't like it either. But I'm going to see episode 9 because I want to see how it wraps up. But if I don't like it, who am I kidding? I'm going to go and see them anyway. But
I'm going to see all of them.
But the people that might be on the fence about it, if they're not enjoying them, they're not going to go fork out money for a maybe good Star Wars movie, you know, when they can fork out, you know, money for a maybe good Jurassic Park movie or a maybe good Marvel movie.
I think that's what they're doing as well, is they're trying to make movies that what they're looking for as an audience before they make the movie. So like with Solo, they were considering like there's going to be so many people who's going to want to see a standalone Solo movie. And it's the same with Boba Fett. It's like he's such a famous character. Same with Obi-Wan. They're not looking at it in how can we make the best movies, you know, what can we do in the universe that hasn't been done before. They're just trying to say, how can we make money for this? And I think that's just
100% right.
Yeah, it encapsulates what Disney is and is doing with all these movies. But I think it is a shame. But I think, like you're saying, Alex, you just kind of have to accept that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you do accept that, you'll be kind of happier. Because I think it is, you know, this is now at the point at which, if it was like, it's kind of too late for it to be how I think me and you and a lot of the old Star Wars fans want it to be, which, you know, to be fair, we could be wrong. You know, sometimes when you're too close to something, you don't actually know what's best for it. So I'm not going to say that my opinion's the right opinion. So, you know, there's that. I think the other thing is like, actually I wanted to bring up Ron Howard. Cause I think I get the impression that he maybe, you know, is more of a sort of old school Star Wars fan. I mean, you know, how old was he when it was coming out? He was like on Happy Days when Star Wars was a thing.
He was an actor in American Graffiti.
There you go. So I think he actually, and I want to talk about him actually, cause I think he did a good job. Now, like we said earlier, this movie had some production problems, so it's kind of unclear what is and isn't all of Ron Howard's work.
Evidently, he reshot 80% of the movie.
But I wanted to make a few notes. Firstly, the speeder chase at the beginning of the movie, I thought that was really great. It kind of reminded me a little bit of, I don't know if you've seen it, he did a really great Formula One movie called Rush.
You know, I've still never seen that, and I do love Chris Hemsworth.
So I think that Ron Howard brought some good direction and cinematography and stuff to the movie that made it feel a bit different. Like, you know, it certainly didn't feel like Last Jedi or Force Awakens did, or even like Rogue One did. Like, I think it is a fairly well polished and put together little production, and I think he's to thank for a lot of that, I would say, because I kind of trust him.
But it did look a bit boring though. Like, it wasn't like wow, there were no wow moments visually.
What would be a wow moment? Like, what, I feel like we've seen everything in this. Like, I guess you could make up new things, but I mean, part of the problem with the current trilogy is that they keep kind of just going from planet to planet and doing these big battles. Like, that's boring. You know, I thought the speeded chase was good. I thought that, you know, there wasn't maybe any great Falcon stuff, but he showed a different side of the world that wasn't about big war between Rebellion and Empire. And I think they showed that well, I think, if that makes sense. It was a smaller stage.
That just reminded me. In that bit where the Empire's recruiting, there's the recruitment video on the screen and they're playing the Imperial March on the screen. That annoyed me to no end because I was like, John Williams can't exist in this universe.
The soundtrack was I quite liked the soundtrack.
I did not. I really did not like the soundtrack.
What did you not like about it, Liam?
Obviously, it's not going to be John Williams, and I think it's important for them not to just constantly try and replicate John Williams because it's just going to get really old and tainted. But just for the soundtrack, I didn't like it. It didn't really fit the – maybe it didn't fit the movie I wanted it to be. It probably fit the movie that it was. but maybe I just had too many gripes with it the whole time. I'm like, oh, this shouldn't be the soundtrack or this shouldn't actually be what the movie is. But – yeah, I wasn't a fan.
And the bits where they shoehorned like the Star Wars fanfare in, I didn't like that.
No, that's what I liked about it because, like, okay, there wasn't really much of the score that was like original or like interesting, but like I think when they did do those little motifs and that's what helps you kind of, you know, fit into the world, I kind of like that. And they do a bit of Jewel of the Fates when Darth Maul was there. I thought that was clever.
Stuff like Jewel of the Fates or like the Han theme playing for these characters works. But to just put the Star Wars fanfare in the middle of like a chase when it's not, I don't know. And they sped it up. It just felt really like, don't forget, this is Star Wars. Don't forget.
Yeah.
There's almost like there's like a Star Wars style guide, right? Obviously, there would have to be. But there's almost like there's a bit of a Star Wars story guide too, which needs to be maybe not adhered to so closely. Like you were saying before with the hologram, like how many times are they going to introduce a character via a hologram? Like, you know, forget that. Like it's been done. Like, you know, it's almost like they're like you said earlier, ticking all these boxes of things that they think need to be in a Star Wars story, which isn't true.
Well, I think we can talk about whether it's a good Star Wars movie or not until the cows come home, and we probably will keep talking about it for a long time. But do you think it's a good, like, do you, Alex, think it's a good heist movie, and did you like the gangster elements?
I think it's a good heist movie, but I wish there was a bit more gangster elements, and I think Crimson Dawn is something that they could explore in the future. And it would be really interesting and fun.
I think I agree with you. I liked the bits where there was stakes when they were like in a room with someone and you didn't know if it was going to get them or not. But then it's like, no, we're buddies on a ship. I would have liked a bit more danger from the movie, which is difficult when you know everyone survives.
I agree with that, actually. I agree with that. Yeah. Well, I mean, we all, didn't you think the hero was going to die the whole movie and then she ends up living? That was a bit of a twist.
Well, that's true. And she ended up being the double crossing twists at the end were interesting. Oh, I also want to ask you, Alex, about some of the lines of dialogue. Did you like the line, "I hate you, I know"?
Not really. I hated it in the trailer, I've got a really good feeling about this. But I liked it a bit better in the movie because I thought that was kind of a clever way of you know, paying a bit of respect to that line and the Star Wars thing, but, you know, in a way, actually showing that he's still got innocence in his character, or kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, it actually was a really good little line of, to show how he feels, even though that's what he's saying. But do you know what I mean? It kind of like, it says more than it says, I think. It says more than any "I've got a bad feeling about this" line says, to be honest. Like, it was actually a clever moment.
If I had not seen it in the trailer, I think I would have found myself enjoying it. But I hated it in the trailer, I didn't like it. The other thing is, what did you think of the scene where Han is like, because I hated that.
I
read a tweet before I saw the movie a few weeks ago that was like, Han speaks to Chewie like in Wookiee, and I thought it was a troll. I thought someone was taking the piss.
I don't know. I mean, like, okay, the only thing that really makes up for that is that Han always understands what Chewie's saying. So we obviously know that he understands Wookiee. So it actually fits with the thing. Is it kind of embarrassing to see a humanoid speak Wookiee? Yes. But does it happen in the Star Wars world? Maybe it does.
I guess so.
But then again, Wookiees understand English, so...
Yeah.
But then again, he was trying to prove that he was a nice... I don't know.
I think it was only just so unnecessary because, you know, he could have just easily have... You know, being the only person thrown in the pit who's understand what he said without him having to repeat it back. And obviously Chewie knows English. And that whole thing when Chewbacca reveals his name to Han and then Han's like, oh, you're going to need a nickname. Like, there was just so many moments like that where it was like, it wasn't necessary at all for them.
I think that all those little moments, like, I think that they were one step away from being really on the nose and really crap, but they kind of just passed. So it didn't offend me, if that makes sense.
You know,
like, if they had have said, I'm going to call you Chewie, like, that would have been fucking dumb.
Yeah, nah. I can see that. I think they just had the accumulative effect of me, them kind of, like, constantly doing it. Like, I understand them doing it, like, you know, when characters are introduced, but it was, like, it was a bit too much for me.
Yeah, in a good movie, I probably would have laughed at some of those.
I have one more thing, actually, which we haven't even really touched on, is what did we think of Childish Gambino, Triple Threat, as Lando Calrissian?
I thought he did a good job, because Lando's really not in Star Wars all that much up until this point, screen time-wise. Like... compared to some of the other characters. But I thought he did a good job. And he evoked Billy Dee Williams without copying him.
Yeah, I agree.
I think similar to Alden, he wasn't trying to copy it completely. It was just like, you know, it was just a bit cringy. It was evident he was trying to do all his mannerisms or anything. And I think he brought his own style.
And he fucked the robot, though.
Yeah, that you know, the L337, that was a bit too on the nose for me. Too Disney trying to, you know, be all social justice warrior.
Wow. Liam's having a go at someone for being a social justice warrior.
I think it really would have worked if it had been, you know, the subtle. And, like, it was Star Wars, and the character was comedic, but I think it was just, I didn't really buy it.
No, I felt like it took me out of the movie.
Well, you have, like, C-3PO, who, like, you know, you get C-3PO vibes from LT-37, the whole humans are oppressing me and everything, and the whole, like, disgruntled droid is kind of a trope of Star Wars movies and the universe, but... it did take me out of the movie and it was a bit too on the nose and, it wasn't necessary.
You know what? Speaking about the droid, this is the first Star Wars movie. Well, you know what? Rogue One was probably did this well as well. But, like, you know, Force Awakens introduced, you know, BB-8 introduced, you know, all these new characters. Last Jedi then introduced Porgs and the Crystal Foxes and the Black BB-8. And, like, I remember at the time, one of the problems I had with The Last Jedi was that there were so many moments that I was like, this is just in here to sell a toy, like the whole casino planet thing. Whereas this movie, obviously we want a droid in a Star Wars movie. That's kind of, you know, like I said, part of the style and story guide that has to be there. But L3 was probably the only thing out of this movie that, like, was put in there. Not that she was put in there to sell toys, but my point is, like, I appreciate that it wasn't like The Last Jedi where they were putting in fluffy little animals just to make toys. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't anything like that in this movie.
But you will have to buy your white and blue Millennium Falcon toy now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'll have to buy a new Millennium Falcon. That's a given. That's a given. But, like, do you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't anything, or there wasn't a lot of moments that I was like, this is to make a toy out of, which I thought was refreshing, actually, compared to The Last Jedi.
Well, should we give scores?
I haven't thought about it.
Well, okay, first question then. Do you want it to be part of the list? It's kind of got to be, right?
We give every movie a score that we do an episode
for. Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 7.5, 7.5.
Right. Well, I have thought about it, and I'm going to give it a 5. So that means that it's got a score of 6.25. So it's the same as Mean Streets. What would you give it, Liam?
I would give it a solid 5.
Fair enough. That puts it below The Big Sleep on 6.5 and above Public Enemies on 6.125. Yeah, for me, it was just a feature-length version of the casino planet seen in The Last Jedi. Would I recommend it to friends? Maybe not friends my age. Would I would I take like a little kid to it? Yeah, I would, you know, I would. It's like the Clone Wars, standard-wise, for me. Fun, but not great.
Yeah, for me, kind of just symbolized what Star Wars had become. Like, it sort of had been a slope of, like, realization through, you know, the first movie, and then when The Last Jedi was revealed, and Rogue One, and now it's kind of like confirmed, like, okay, this is what they're doing with Star Wars now. And it's kind of like, yeah, so now it's kind of like, okay, you kind of have to accept what this is Star Wars and enjoy it, or try and enjoy it and not be too picky, because at the end of the day, you're just going to get really disappointed. But I think I still was disappointed.
It was the best Star Wars movie Walt Disney has ever made.
Well, that's your opinion. I think it's about the same as most of them. But there's another heist movie coming out very soon. I think only in like a week or so. Ocean's 8. Let me tell you. Yeah, 7th of June. It comes out in 1 week. So, do we still want to do our Ocean's 11, Ocean's 8 3 weeks?
I guess so. That was the plan. Let's do it.
Well, if you did decide to listen to our episode today, because we're doing a movie currently in theaters, let us know. You can contact us on Twitter at The Podfather Pod. You can contact us on Facebook, The Podfather. You can email us at thepodfatherpodcast@gmail.com. Or check out our list on Letterboxd. You can reach us anywhere.
Give us a shout.
And watch the Rat Pack version of Ocean's 11 before next week, if you like.
Thanks, everyone.
And thank you, Liam, for joining us. It was an honour, as always, to have you back on the show.
No worries. Thank you for having me on this immaculate podcast.
Yeah, are you going to have your own podcast? It's coming out soon. You going to go solo? We've given you a taste tour.
We're going to keep current by hopefully getting on the bandwagon of new movies. That's what we're doing these days. We're doing new movies. We've sold out. All of the old fans are going to be upset. I'm just currently signing over the rights to the Walt Disney Corporation. There's going to be a Podfather ride at Disney World.
What would that be? What would that be?
So it's all going well over here. I don't know, actually. It would have to incorporate, like, I think it would be in a few different phases. There would be a love story component, where you fall in love with a girl and take her on a date, like in in Goodfellas, then there would be like a drive-by shooting part of it, and then there would be at the end, and then there would be a sort of little part where you like have heartbroken and treat the girl terribly, and then at the end of the shootout, and you're like, and then you jump off the balcony and die.
I think if our podcast was a ride, it would be you get tied down on a chair, you know, with a safety harness, and then just two white guys come and stand either side of you and start talking about movies, whether you care or not.